First in our Bill of Rights is the freedom to hear uncensored ideas and opinions, to think your own thoughts, and to say what's on your mind. We couldn't have liberty without it. Now, more than ever, it's good to spout off, to listen, debate, and participate. Here's your host of Spouting Off, commentator, columnist, and all-around rabble-rouser, Karen Cataline.
Hey everyone, I'm a regular guest host on the nationally syndicated Alan Nathan Show on the Main Street Radio Network.
Now, the one who protects us all from prattling prognosticators and perfidious pundits.
I say, America, stay out the bushes.
Look for the Union Naval.
And to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the government.
From my cold, dead hands.
I'm concerned that if we don't impeach this president, he will get reelected.
It's time for the Alan Nathan Show. Here he is, the longest-running nationally syndicated centrist host in the country, Alan Nathan.
Well, welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. And we have with us to open this hour, author, poet, love that, columnist and attorney. She was previously a visiting fellow with the American Institute for Economic Research and a policy analyst at the Libertas Institute. Her latest book is Progressive Prejudice, Exposing the Devouring Mother. Oh, that is a great title. Leslie Corbley joins us right now on the Alan Nathan Show. Hi, Leslie. Good to have you along.
Thanks so much for having me.
You know, it is so enticing to ask you more about this title, Progressive Prejudice, we get, but who's the devouring? Explain why you decided to call it the Devouring Mother. Love that.
Sure. So the Devouring Mother is the archetype of free female predation. And I think our society really struggles to discuss female perpetrated abuse and female forms of aggression and malevolence, frankly. And I think that that's often embodied in progressive politics, where you're supposed to, there's a strong incentive to talk a lot about care and nurturing, but often that nurturing is a form of power and control rather than actually a form of caring for the individual who's allegedly the object of nurturance.
Oh, that is a wonderful psychological truism that people who are professional victims, and of course the Democrat Party are professional victims, rule through victimhood. When you rule through victimhood, or you claim, well, haven't I always wanted just the best for you? Everybody knows people like that in their personal life, professional victims. But when they encounter an entire party that is based on it, they sometimes fall prey. Isn't that kind of true sometimes?
Well, absolutely. And I just think it's an under-discussed phenomenon in society how, women tend to, so an example would be, you know, people think of when someone thinks of abuse, they usually think of a male perpetrator, right? If people are accused of abusing a child, for example, almost certainly the man is going to be more on someone's radar as far as the likelihood they're going to believe he engaged in predation. And that's true in certain realms, right? I mean, men engage in certain types of predation more than women. But I think, again, what's often not discussed is the ways in which women are specific, the way their proclivity towards violence. It looks different. So an example I use in the book would be, I'm sure you've heard of Gypsy Rose Blanchard, the girl who plotted to kill her mom. So her mom had a disorder called Munchausen by proxy, which is where almost exclusively women who have this disorder. I think it's just a character flaw, but regardless, the woman creates fictitious disorders for the daughter, right? She has leukemia, she has seizures, she has whatever it is she claims she has, and then treats those medically, which of course functionally is abuse because the child doesn't have any disorders to actually treat.
They're putting her through all these tests, and the mother gets all this attention.
Exactly. You know? And so if you take away the medical element, though, you strip it of the medical element and you just leave the emotional and psychological element, you can see how this actually occurs quite a bit more than people would be willing to recognize in family settings, right? So I practice family law, and it's not uncommon for fathers to talk a lot about the ways in which their children's identity is unable to be separated from maternal identity. And that makes a lot of sense because, mothers are a child's first authority figure, a first attachment figure. They have a lot of power and control, frankly, over the incentive structure that governs how children understand themselves and the world around them. And sure. So there's, I think that that's just not often discussed, how that's a form of control and it's a form of manipulation. And it is much easier, in fact, for women to perpetrate that type of control than men.
Yeah. Well, and at our house, we like to watch a lot of crime videos. We like to watch crime cams, which is really kind of hilarious as an aside because it was the Democrats that demanded it. And now it makes the cops look as amazing as they have always been, most of them, and more patient than the rest of us would ever be, and not biased or racist. But very often, and the cops are not guilty of this, but very often people automatically assume it's the man in a domestic violence situation, and it isn't always. Mm-hmm. Very often it's a woman who's guilty of domestic violence. How does that figure in to, actually, let's move right in to what we were supposed to talk about, which is part of your book, that Democrats voted against honoring Kirk, and it was just a symbolic move to support it, and they could not bring themselves to support a symbolic move. The hatred and the vitriol goes even to someone who's been assassinated on that very day. Talk about that, if you would. I mean, that's truly psychotic, isn't it?
Well, I think it's the outgrowth of their belief system, and frankly, the fact that they haven't really had to challenge, or there's not a lot of challenging of their belief system, nor is there generally an incentive in progressive cultures to self-reflect. So I don't think it's it's symbolic that Charlie Kirk was killed on a college campus, which is a sanctuary for left-wing ideas and a space where, frankly, they think that they should not have opposing views sort of imposed upon them, right? I think that there's very much an idea of how dare you come to our space where we're safe and say things we don't want to hear and have discussions we don't want to have, right? There's not a lot of self-reflection in progressive culture at all that I'm aware of. I would say significantly less than that on the right, not necessarily because those on the right are inherently better, but because there's been a lot more critique and pushback against their ideas, and that tends to cause self-reflection to occur. Whereas those on the left just haven't had to contend with that and therefore haven't engaged in self-reflection. And so when it comes to why do they feel comfortable not honoring Charlie Kirk, I think it comes down to that, to a twisted and perverted form of empathy and compassion, where in their head, if you're one of these big, bad fascists, terrible people who spewed hate, misogynist, whatever, pejorative it is that day that they've come up with, then you aren't deserving of compassion, right? So those on the left really believe that their system should be used. Their system of beliefs is what should govern whether an individual has access to compassion or care. And that's, again, where I think that there's a lot of hypocrisy, which is that they don't think that everyone, frankly, is inherently equal. I don't think that they really believe that. They say they pay lip service to that idea, but functionally speaking, they don't think that's true. Now, even if you thought everything that came out of Charlie Kirk's mouth was horrible and awful, the man was not a...
And it wasn't. It was a lie. But that's beside the point.
Let's just say you think that.
Yeah.
He wasn't violent. He was he actually temperamentally was far less aggressive than a lot of those on the left. I mean, you take a well-known commentator like Destiny, and he's far more aggressive in his rhetoric.
Well,
than
he
Charlie
was a
Kirk
threat
was.
Because he wasn't those things. He was a much bigger threat because he was so effective being a model, and they couldn't handle a model
of
civility.
Is that there's again, this chasm within themselves and this tension is a huge cognitive dissonance within the progressive mind of being willing to hate someone purely for the ideas they put forth, even when those ideas are not stated aggressively or in an angry manner, even when the person is sort of embodies a lot of the traits they claim to admire. Again, you can be anti-MAGA all you want. I think Charlie Kirk was horrible, but he was not a aggressive, hateful individual. And I think that's pretty clear to most of the public. And that's one of the reasons I think all of this stuff is very much backfiring on progressives, because I would say we're entering an era where progressive prejudice is increasingly being exposed and the public is increasingly able to see it for what it is and say, yeah, it's kind of nice that you talk about tolerance and love and compassion. Opposite, right? And I don't think it's lost on the public that those who are preaching tolerance and love are the same people who vandalized his vigil or his memorial. You know, it looks awfully similar, frankly, to those that were wildly reviled. And I think one of the reasons those on the right began to lose so much public support. I mean, you think of the Westboro Baptist Church back in the early 2000s and the kind of ways in which they would use the Bible in a really sort of disgusting and demeaning way. Right.
Well, I might say, though,
and I think it's something similar. Do you get what I mean?
Like, conservatives did not support that. They actually condemned it. Whereas the left, every leftist politician supports what they're doing.
I agree, but what I mean is the left was able to sort of use that and put it all over the news, you know, especially back when the news was gatekept so heavily. And it became kind of emblematic of what people had in their head when
I
got to
run.
Someone,
I'm so sorry. Yeah, I let this go too long. Leslie Corbly, look her up. Get her book, Corbly, Corbly. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back.
SUVs are, without question, the most popular vehicle choice in the United States. But with so many models available, it can be difficult to know which one would be best for you. Kia America's James Bell has more.
People often think SUVs and crossovers are the same, but they're not. Traditional SUVs are built on truck platforms and are designed for towing and more off-roading exercises. Crossovers, on the other hand, share more with cars, which means better fuel economy and a smoother ride. The decision really comes down to the lifestyle and how you plan to use your next vehicle.
What might surprise you is that SUVs are not limited to gas engines. Hybrid and plug-in hybrid options are widely available. The Kia Sportage, for example, comes in gas, hybrid, and plug-in hybrid, giving drivers great choices for how they plan to travel.
There's no one-size-fits-all SUV, but almost all are built for adventure. And the trick is finding the one that amplifies your lifestyle and your passengers.
To learn more about the latest SUVs and crossovers, visit Kia.com.
So there's really three factors that come into play that says exactly why mid-October is a great time to buy. So first, there's just more homes on the market this time of year. And so that means that buyers are going to have more options and more time to make their choices, and that they're going to see that sellers are more motivated to get out of the market and make a sale. Second, this is a time of year where there's less competition from other buyers. So there's just fewer buyers in the market, and that's going to mean that buyers are going to notice that, you know, there's less people to compete with. And then third, prices actually come down this time of year relative to other times of year too. So there's really a lot of savings to be had if you're a buyer who's fortunate enough to be in the market right now. And then get connected with a realtor on realtor.com. This is someone who knows your market inside and out, is going to be able to help you to guide your home search from start to finish. So for more information, you can go to realtor.com either through our app or our website. And if you really want to know more about why this is such a great time to buy, go to realtor.com/besttimetobuy.
There's nothing worse than losing cell service while exploring the great outdoors, but that's changing fast. T-Mobile is bringing coverage to the most remote parts of the country with T-Satellite with Starlink, reaching over 500,000 square miles where towers can't, thanks to over 650 satellites already in orbit. Over a million messages have already been sent in hard-to-reach areas from national parks to remote trails. King of Phillips, travel expert.
As someone who's constantly off the beaten path, this changes everything. Now I can stay connected, even deep in the mountains or deserts.
For more information, visit T-Mobile.com, sponsored by T-Mobile.
Some seizures may go unnoticed, but the stories of people with epilepsy will not. Share your story to educate others.
To empower others to seek treatment.
To show others they are not alone.
To help others change their journey.
Let's get everyone to start talking about epilepsy and seizures.
I am ready to share my story.
I'm ready to share my story.
Let's change our epilepsy story.
Let's change our epilepsy story.
For more information, visit changeourstory.org.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the All in Ellen Nathan Show. Thank you very much for staying with us. We are pleased to have Vice President of the National Right to Work Legal Defense Foundation. He's worked for nearly two decades to publicize the foundation's cases defending worker freedom. Patrick Simmons joins us right now on the Ellen Nathan Show. Hi, Patrick. Good to have you along.
Karen, great to be on with you.
Good to have you. So, the Federal Bureau of Prisons has terminated collective bargaining agreement with AFGE. Can you help us understand what AFGE is and why that's important for us to get a hold of here?
Yeah, absolutely. So AFGE is the American Federation of Government Employees. It's one of many unions that, quote, represents and kind of finger quotes on that, because as we'll explain in a minute, it's not quite that simple, federal employees. And this is in all sorts of agencies all across the federal government. And what the power they have over these employees is extraordinary. I mean, this is there's government-imposed union contracts that these union officials supposedly negotiate with the government. And it's a one-size-fits-all. So you may not like the union. You may never have voted for union. You may not be a union member. You may not be paying dues to the union. And yet you're stuck under the conditions of employment that the union decides. And in many cases, they're doing this in a way that really is antithetical to our system of representative government. You know, the head of the executive branch is, of course, the president. And Donald Trump came in with he ran on an agenda. He's trying to implement that. And yet he has union bosses countering, and they're using their monopoly bargaining powers, these special bargaining powers that they have over these workers, basically to obstruct the president's agenda and the agenda that voters put him in office to implement. So we've seen this big battle between the Trump administration and federal government union bosses over who should run federal policy, who should be deciding what these agencies do and don't do. And so this latest executive actions that the administration has taken is to curtail this for the Federal Bureau of Prisons. But this is just the latest, and they've at this point over three quarters of government employees who were unionized have now had that power eliminated. And of course, that doesn't mean that the workers aren't protected. There's still a lot of protections in federal law beyond the union system. But the one-size-fits-all union boss power over these workers is being eliminated. And for many workers, including those who the National Right to Work Foundation assisted, they're happy with this. They don't want to be stuck under a union they oppose. They don't want union bosses to be given these extraordinary powers, and powers that cost the taxpayers a lot of money. We're talking about the union being provided office space in federal buildings, union officials being paid. They're supposed to be federal employees, but instead of doing the work of the taxpayers and the voters, they actually work for the union, often countering the efforts of the taxpayers and the voters. So that's what this battle is about. This is the latest in that, but this is a bigger issue, and one of whether voters and their representatives determine federal government policy or whether they have to negotiate over those policies with unelected, unaccountable government union bosses.
Wow. That's really interesting. And many people who aren't intimately involved with this issue like you are, they don't think there's anything wrong. They don't understand necessarily why there might be something wrong with unions, the unionizing of government employees in general. I mean, as a rule, obviously there are other examples, but for the most part, aren't they unionizing against the very people that they're supposed to serve? And I'm not sure, does your organization really help to educate people about that? Because most people would say, well, what's wrong with unions, you know, if they're voluntary or whatever? But this is a lot different. You know, a lot of us are not crazy about unions anyway, but unions for federal workers, don't they serve at the pleasure of the president or not?
Well, the union bosses don't, but the employees of the federal government are supposed to. But yeah, you hit on a lot of important points there. I mean, and one of the big ones is that this is not voluntary. There's nothing voluntary about this system. And that's why you've got, I mean, you go back to Franklin Delano Roosevelt, big fan of unions in the private sector. But he said, and he specifically was against government unions. He said, all government employees should realize that the process of collective bargaining, as usually understood, cannot be transplanted into the public service. In other words, the idea of, you know, the business owner and the unions butting heads, that doesn't work where the, quote, employer is fundamentally the American people. And you see this problem in the federal government, and we see this in locals as well. I mean, the public schools is a great example. You've got, you know, who controls the public schools? Should it be voters and parents and the elected officials who voters put in office? Or should it be school teachers union bosses who have a very radical agenda that is often not about what's best for students, not about what's best for taxpayers, but about enforcing a rigid and ideological agenda that's about indoctrinating the future generations. And that is not what what public schools should be about, but that's what it's become about because of this monopoly that union bosses have been handed over so much of our public education. And, of course, the federal government's another example of that.
Can't one make the fair assumption or assertion that the big government Democrats are pushing this because that exemplifies their belief in bigger and biggest government?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they like for many reasons. You know, you look at just the specific example of the federal government. So one of the things that we saw is the Biden administration, especially after Election Day, and they knew that Trump was coming back into office, they tried to rush through contracts specifically to stifle Trump administration agenda.
Exactly.
In some cases, they had seven-year contracts that they were specifically going into and saying, hey, this way you'll be covered for the entire next term, and you can use this, say, oh, well, we can't do that because our union contract says we can't, you know, we can't carry out this this presidential directive. And so, you know, yeah, you see that at the very, you know, specific level that we're talking about here with the Trump administration. And then more generally, of course, government union bosses send hundreds of millions of dollars each year to left-wing political causes, including Democrat candidates. And so, you know, you look at most unions and they're 98% of their money is going to one political party. So they like that cycle of taxpayer dollars being cut off and sent back into their campaign coffers.
Patrick, how can everybody find you and follow you and the work you're doing on this and other issues at Right to Work?
Sure. We're at nrtw.org on the web. You can follow us on X at Right to Work. And you can find us anywhere else by just, you know, search National Right to Work Foundation, and you'll get all our information. And people can also come to us for free legal aid if they're having
Thank you. We got to run. We'll be right back.
Emily Ramsey, daughter of celebrity chef Gordon Ramsay, is ready to step out of her father's shadow into her own culinary adventures with the new series Dish It Out, premiering Friday, September 5th on Prime Video. A passionate foodie and aspiring chef, Tilly celebrates online trends and family recipes, alongside some surprise visitors in the kitchen, including her parents Gordon and Tana Ramsay, Gillian Jacobs, Frankie Grande, and many more. In each episode, Tilly receives a mystery box from chefs, influencers, and home cooks from around the world and uses the ingredients to cook a dish for a studio guest. Tilly Ramsay.
I sat next to my father in the kitchen for my entire life and wanted to become a chef for as long as I can remember. Now that I've graduated culinary school, I'm ready to sharpen my skills and create exciting new dishes for my guests, and will be sure to have plenty of fun along the way.
Don't miss Dish It Out starting this Friday, September 5th, only on Prime Video.
I first want to underscore that Hispanics may be getting the disease younger and may be more at risk, so it's important to be aware of this. Having a history of a Parkinson's in the family, but having chronic constipation, whether in yourself or in your family, also chronic depression yourself or a family, then having smell loss, and also having a long-standing what we call REM sleep behavior. That is when you act out in your dreams, you act out in your sleep, you talk in your sleep, you may sleepwalk. All these are apparently risk factors that contribute to perhaps having a greater incidence or chance of developing Parkinson's. You can go to the michaeljfox.org/PPMI to find out more so that we can make bigger strides. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
You know that feeling? Like every door is closing and you just can't see a way out? Being unemployed, underemployed, or just out of school feels a lot like that. But when you find the right tools, suddenly everything just clicks. Getting on that path may be easier than you think. A good place to start? Go to findsomethingnew.org. At findsomethingnew.org, you have access to resources that help develop new skills. Skills that will position you for careers in today's growing industries, from healthcare and manufacturing to cybersecurity and alternative energy. Plus, you can take advantage of online courses, certification programs, apprenticeships, and more. So you can take yourself from unemployed and uncertain to empowered and prepared for what's next. Find your path to a new career today. Visit findsomethingnew.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp.
I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today. One of the pleasures of doing this program as a regular fill-in host, guest host, is being able to talk to people well involved with organizations that I, for one, am extremely impressed by. I am referring to a group called Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. We're going to learn about that, particularly in light of everything that's going on today, a gearing up fight between the perennial fight between communism and capitalism, free markets versus tyranny. But here to talk about it from a really especially knowledgeable place is Dr. Eric Patterson from the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. He's president and CEO. He previously served as president of the Religious Freedom Institute. He's also served in the State Department and in the Air National Guard. Thank you, Dr. Patterson, for joining us for this edition of the Alan Nathan Show.
Karen, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me back.
It is such a pleasure. Before we talk about what many pundits, are calling Commie Mamdani, let's talk about the Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. I'll just preface this by saying it drives me nuts when I hear Republicans say, well, it's always been proven that communism doesn't work. You know what? That's not the best argument against communism. Communism creates murder victims and actual deaths and genocide. You, the name of your organization, makes that perfectly clear in the title, Victims of Communism. Tell us more about this foundation.
Karen, thanks. We are a nonprofit educational foundation based in Washington, D.C., and our mission is to educate all generations about just what you said, the terrible legacy, ideology, and history of murderous communism. We serve as an educational institution to provide policy-relevant information to lawmakers, for instance, to tell them this is what's really happening with the Uyghur genocide in China. This is how to really understand what's going on in Venezuela or Cuba or other places. We have a whole set of educational resources, a high school curriculum, middle school curriculum, all available on our website or through our Amazon page. And then we have a museum that we opened in 2022 near the White House, right here in Washington at McPherson Square. And in all of these places, we try to do just what you said. Communism has been tried. It's been tried for decade after decade after decade after decade. Does it make people's lives better? No. Can it be very, very effective at squashing dissent, creating a beautiful life for a small group of elites? Well, look at the Kim family, for instance, in North Korea and their friends. They live a very good life, but they do it based on repression, slave labor, surveillance, etc. It's the same true of the communist elite in China, just like it was in the Soviet Union. Communism doesn't work if by work what we're talking about is making people's lives better for the vast citizenry. It never works that way. But it does work quite well to enrich a small idealistic elite and for them to use human beings as just tools in their machine.
Thank you so much for that, Dr. Patterson. I'll follow it up by asking, you know, I'm old enough to remember when it was a given that we were anti-communist. Of course, everyone remembers, you know, Hollywood making victims out of actors and that whole thing, the Red Scare of, I guess it was the 50s and the 60s. But for the most part, we were a homogeneous group of people that appreciated and understood that America was founded to completely as a complete opposite to the tyranny of centuries of dictators and what have you. Do you think that the anti-communists and even like JFK would be a center-right Republican today? Did Republicans and others who really consider this a primary value, were we complacent, ignorant, foolish? What? How did it happen? You wrote this wonderful article called Why 62% of Young Americans Are Falling for Pop Marxism. How did that happen?
Well, it happened largely because we weren't paying attention to what they were being taught. We've had survey results for 15 years now telling us that at least a third of our young adults and teenagers have positive views towards words like socialism, communism, and Marxism. And this really stunning survey from earlier this year, as you said, 62% have a favorable idea of socialism. Well, I'll tell you how that happened. And it is the consensus that you just described broke down quite a long time ago among some elites. For the past 20 years, maybe longer, in higher education and then in our high schools, and it's filtered down, instead of telling the great story that you were just referencing, that America was built on fundamental principles of ordered liberty, and that we have scars to prove the fight for it, the fight against slavery and racism, most importantly. But the trajectory from the Mayflower Complex to the War for Independence, the Declaration of Independence to Martin Luther King Jr., the trajectory was towards greater liberty and more opportunity for more people. That's the American dream. Instead, these young people over the past 20 years or so, what they've been taught is look at history through the Marxist lens of oppressor versus oppressed. They didn't even know it was Marxism. They were just told American history is full of oppressors. They're usually white, male, and Christian, oppressing everybody else. And you know what? That's the story of American history. And the alternatives which point towards equality are better. But you know what? That's how we got to this point, Karen.
Mm. It's heartbreaking, really, to watch not just young people, but the standard Democrat politician is really, I don't know if you've ever heard of, I can't remember the name of the person, doggone it, who has been warning that there were many, many secret communists in our government. He wasn't McCarthy, but he was an Australian or New Zealander who came to America to try to warn.
This is Fred Schwartz.
Do you remember
him? This is
who?
Fred Schwartz. And
no, it was somebody else. But
he was an Australian. I think that's who we're talking about. I think that's the right name with a Christian anti-communist crusade. And they did. He would go to college campuses. He was an early Charlie Kirk. He went around the country denouncing the communists on college campuses and debating anyone who would debate him.
Exactly. And I also wonder, because communism has grown in the dark and in secrecy and in denial, there are many more communists in our government than would admit it. And the very idea, for example, and I guess we're going to pivot over to this, although you've graciously agreed to stay another segment, but they're short. And that is, it is a lie. It's like political theater for people to think that all the Democrats that were struggling not to endorse Commie Mamdani disagreed with him. They'd like people to think they disagreed with his communism, but unfortunately, their actions have not suggested that at all, not even a little bit. What say you about that as we pivot into this additional discussion here?
Sure. I don't have anything to say about how I just don't know about, you know, different individuals. What I would say is that I think there are plenty of people on the center left who are scared to death of what Mamdani represents. And the reason is because what his platform says, when you read it carefully, it's a platform of class warfare, saying most of us have had things stolen from us. We deserve to take things from others. from landlords, from property owners, from business owners. We're going to dramatically increase taxes. We're going to dramatically increase the power of the state. And what we're going to do is provide a bunch of freebies. And that is anyone who's concerned about the rule of law, anyone who's concerned about this kind of radical class warfare, the targeting of political enemies using these mechanisms, running private businesses out of business, it's worrying.
It's of great concern. And luckily, we have more time with Dr. Eric Patterson. So thank you for holding on. He's from Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation. He's president and CEO. And we'll give you that information when we come back. I personally hope you'll go there and learn more and support the work they do. You're listening to The Alan Nathan Show. I'm Karen Cataline, filling in for Alan today on the Main Street Radio Network. Stay tuned.
Hi, I'm Christina Daves. I'm a lifestyle expert with some tailgate tips for you. So my go-to drink this tailgate season is Carbless, premium cocktails in a can. They have delicious flavors like pineapple and watermelon, and it's a woman and veteran-owned business. You want to stay hydrated and healthy on game day? So these are Sierra packets. They come from the Vitamin Shop, the leading destination for lifelong wellness solutions. You have electrolytes, and then you have your greens that are organic fruits and vegetables, probiotics, and fiber, so you feel great all day. And then you want to take your drinks. You make them at home. This is an insulated flask from High Camp Flask. This is a Firefight version. It has two tumblers attached to it with a magnet, and these can be customized as well. So to get more tips like this, please go to my website at ChristinaDaves.com.
Obesity affects more than 40% of American adults, yet too often people are left without access to the support they need due to high costs, outdated one-size-fits-all treatments, or long wait times to see a specialist. Obesity medicine specialist and the head of weight loss at Hims & Hers, Dr. Craig Premack, explains.
The average wait time to see an obesity specialist in the U.S. is about 5 months. Through Hims & Hers, customers typically have their intake reviewed by a licensed provider in about 3 hours. A new analysis shows that customers accessing personalized GLP-1 treatment plans through Hims & Hers lost an average of 20 pounds, or 10% of their body weight, in 6 months. 75% of customers stayed on treatment after 6 months, far exceeding typical dropout rates. With a personalized approach and support across nutrition, movement, and mental health, and 24/7 access to a dedicated care team, the result is a comprehensive care experience that helps people succeed and build healthier lives for the long term.
To get started, visit forhers.com or hims.com.
While the number of highway rail crossing collisions, deaths, and injuries have dropped over the past 5 decades, every 3 hours in the U.S., a person or vehicle is involved in a train collision. September 15th to 21st is National SeaTrax Think Train Week. John Phleps, Norfolk Southern Chief Safety Officer.
Every safe choice around train tracks is a powerful one. This week shines a spotlight on the importance of staying alert and making smart decisions near train tracks. Trains are faster and quieter than most people realize, and they can take more than a mile to come to a complete stop. That's why it's critical to stay off tracks unless you're at a designated crossing. At crossings, always look and listen for trains and make sure you have a clear view in both directions before proceeding. Safety is a core value and the foundation of everything we do at Norfolk Southern, but safety isn't just our responsibility, it is everyone's. You have more power than the train to stop a crash before it happens by always making safe choices around tracks.
Visit norfolksouthern.com/railsafety to learn more.
Dear John, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this, but you've left me no choice. I'm leaving. Uncontrolled high blood pressure is really serious, and lately you seem to really not care. I've been there for you since day one, and I know you think I'm going to keep ticking. But no, my friend, I can quit whenever I want. Why can't we get back to the good times, when we were more active and ate more healthy foods, and you checked on me every once in a while? Is that too much to ask? I don't want to leave, but unless you stop ignoring me, what else am I supposed to do? Remember, when I quit, you quit. Sincerely, your heart.
Listen to your heart and don't let it quit on you. Doing the minimum to control your high blood pressure isn't doing enough. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late.
For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
We all got to help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're going to be saving our lives. To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back, everyone, to the Alan Nathan Show. We are pleased to have with us for one more segment and to help us close out the hour, Dr. Eric Patterson, President and CEO of Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation in Washington, D.C. Also, President of Religious Freedom Institute, another really important aspect of our Constitution. Thank you, Dr. Patterson, for joining us here on the Alan Nathan Show.
Karen, I'm glad to be here. Thanks.
Good. I direct everyone to your article at victimsofcommunism.org entitled Why 62% of Young Americans Are Falling for Pop Marxism. Let's first talk about whether, I don't like asking people to give predictions. It's as of this broadcast, Mayor Adams has dropped out of the race, supposedly giving Andrew Cuomo more help, although he's a terrible candidate as well. Here's where I stand, and I want you to just comment. I don't see, frankly, a dime's worth of difference between POTUS 44 and Kami Mamdani. POTUS 44 had a conversation with Mamdani. It was reported that they had a telephone conversation. And the only difference is Obama hit it and acted like he wasn't the ideologue that we found out that he was. Mamdani might do the same thing, God forbid he is elected, and try to make people think that it's not as bad as it's going to be ahead of the midterms. Are you concerned about that? And is there anything you think we can do? I know you're not in the business of election strategies, but it scares me right down to my socks. I used to live in New York. I don't anymore. You tell me.
Yeah. I don't have any electoral predictions. I do know that voters at times, some people who vote say, hey, let's give the other side a chance, or let's give this new guy a chance. Let's give this guy maybe has some good ideas. Let's give him a shot, see if it works. I've never understood that type of voting personally, because I think we ought to be starting with first principles first, and then second, looking at track record and expertise and experience. So does someone hold to the values of the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution, to kind of the American ethos of ordered liberty and personal responsibility, or are they someone who is constantly throwing blame at institutions, wants to radically revolutionize institutions, wants to infantilize our public, wants to dramatically raise taxes, wants to create a set of enemies such as property owners, business owners, the people who actually pay taxes, et cetera. I'd say the candidate in New York fails the good side of the test and unfortunately lives up to the terrible side of this type of test. No experience really running anything, but has these anti what I would consider just ideals that are anti-American. what's going to happen in New York. No one knows what's going to happen in next year's midterms. I have no idea. What I would say is I think that we're going to see the U.S. economy really shine over the next year. And that's going to be an important part about whether or not Republicans are able to make gains. I think the economy will be a big part of that.
Yeah. Well, and we can only hope that the only time in my lifetime, Dr. Patterson, that I know of where there was this clear a test, this clear of an open discussion between communism and capitalism was after post-World War II, where East Germany and West Germany were clearly in a test tube. Who did better? Who was happier? Which side of Germany did people want to go to, and which side were kept in by a wall? And today, we don't teach that, and we're seeing that same thing come to pass, that all of these revolutions and violence seems to be the underpinning of communists. How, you know, what say you about that? I don't know, and maybe we need to talk about positives, but honestly, that's what it seems like.
Well, when it comes to historical record, communism's been tried. People say it hasn't been tried. It never was given a chance. But it's 70 years in the Soviet Union. It's had 70 years and 80 years almost in China. And it has to build walls to keep its people in. It has to use propaganda to brainwash its people. It has to surveil them. It always picks some people to be the scapegoats for everybody else. In the case of China, it's people like Falun Gong, it's Muslim Uyghurs, it's Christians who are the scapegoats for society. And when you see them getting beaten all the time, you know what? We better not get out of line. We better. Now, what's happening in this democratic socialist platform in New York City is a lot of freebies, a lot of promises. If you just trust us and give us a lot of power, we're going to increase the size of government. We're going to scapegoat and target some people, and we're going to take from them and give to you. Well, all of that, none of that is the American way of personal responsibility, of respect for our fellow citizens, whether they have less than us or more than us. There's a lack of respect for conscience and for private property there. So it is a very, very worrying set of developments. But what we have to do is be working very, very hard with our younger citizens to explain to them, what does ordered liberty mean in the first place? What is personal responsibility? These are the beauty of our democratic institutions. And civil society is made up of lots of voluntary space. What the New York candidate wants to do is take that all away. Do you want to have your neighbors or churches take a basket to a family as a new baby? Nah, government does that. You want to have private businesses, local franchisees, employing people at the grocery store? Nah, government's going to take that over. In every sector of life, that is a takeover, and it will literally be on the back of most of the citizenry.
So well put, and so very important. We're almost out of time, Dr. Patterson. Tell everybody, I know that your organization started out almost, let's see, was voted for in our Congress, but tell everybody they can find Victims of Communism Memorial Foundation and hopefully learn and donate to your organization, because you're desperately needed at this time. And
thank
always.
You can hit the red button at victimsofcommunism.org to donate or to learn more about us, and visit the museum online page at vocmuseum.org.
Thank you so much for joining us. We so appreciate it, Dr. Eric Patterson. Well, that does it for this edition of The Alan Nathan Show. Tune in every weekday for more, and good day.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the host, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. So please, consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-719-0433 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.